Hey everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Risky Biz Soapbox, brought to you this time by Silence. This is a regular sponsored podcast here on Risky Biz. We do 10 of these each year, and the idea really is just to talk to vendors about what they're doing and what they're seeing and what they're thinking and all of that good stuff. Now, Silence, as many of you would know, that's spelled C-Y-L-A-N-C-E. Silence is a so-called next generation AV company. They were early adopters of machine learning tech and applying machine learning to security problems, and they've been tremendously successful. They're a tech unicorn, clocking up a valuation of over $1 billion in a very short space of time. Silence was founded in 2012, so not that long ago, but there has been a lot of movement in the endpoint security space since then. There are now a whole swag of next-generation endpoint security companies gobbling up the market share of the incumbent AV firms. Now, a lot of these started off in the EDR space, the endpoint detection and response space, and are now doing antivirus as well. It's a very effective way to go to market, as Silence knows. So now, Silence plans to build out its EDR products as well. It's already released an earlier version of its take on EDR, which was met with mixed reviews, but now they're investing heavily in making their detection and response capability first rate, and they have to. That's because we're seeing a new consensus on what endpoint security software should actually do. So in this soapbox, we'll be speaking with Silence's chief product officer about this new trend. Rahul Kashyap has been in the security game for a long time. He worked on developing network-based IDS products with NSecure back in the early 2000s before taking a job at McAfee. He served as McAfee's head of vulnerability research for 4 years there, towards the end of his time there, before he joined Bromium as its chief security architect. Rahul has actually been on Risky Business before. He's a guy who very much knows what's up. I most recently caught up with him over at Black Hat, actually, where we were able to peel ourselves away from the thronging masses for one of the most disgusting iced coffees I think either of us have ever had. What is up with that, Vegas? Anyway, long story short, when Silence nominated Rahul as the speaker for this Soapbox edition, I jumped at it. And in this interview, you'll hear him predict some pretty substantial consolidation in the InfoSec industry, the convergence of a bunch of tech into these anti-malware and EDR suites. We'll talk about Microsoft's renewed push into the endpoint security space, and more. You know, it's a pretty wide-ranging chat. We started off by talking about this idea that the market now knows what it wants when it comes to endpoint security software. It wants endpoints it can interrogate, and it wants AV. It wants these things to come together in the same package and for that package to be lightweight. Here's Rahul.
The market is definitely converging. And what we are seeing as a result, kind of the flattening of the classic endpoint security stack. You know, earlier, you know, you used to have host firewall and a bunch of other things, host IPS and several other pieces, which are kind of less relevant in the current threat landscape and how Microsoft Windows OS has matured. So now what's really emerging are, I would say, the two cornerstones on endpoint security, which is one is how can you provide reliable prevention without signatures? And second is, how do I get visibility and quick detection and response capabilities? Because, you know, we all know that nothing can be 100%. So these two key capabilities are emerging as kind of the refreshed endpoint platform stack, if I may.
Yeah, look, I think one of the things that's interesting about all of this is watching the next gen vendors, and they're all... They all started fairly uniquely, right? But they're all kind of winding up in the same place. It's almost like we've got this accepted definition of what an endpoint security agent should do. You know, I mentioned in the introduction, there's Silence, you guys, you know, Silence that came in via the AV route, which is why you're worth $1 billion, right? Because there's just money up for grabs there. You've got a couple others like Carbon Black, CrowdStrike, to a lesser extent FireEye, because I understand they're coming back to have a crack at this. But everyone's moving towards the same converged sets of features, right?
That's true. And everybody is now trying to get into the AV business because, you know, everybody knows that the existing AV is broken. And I think Silence kind of was the first to have a go at that. and it really worked well.
I think honestly, the thing that Silence, the reason Silence deserves its success is because I think other companies put challenging the incumbent AV companies, they put that in the too hard basket. We'd seen small startups trying to do AV before and they never quite nailed it, right?
Yeah.
So it was kind of a high risk, high return strategy. So that's why, you know, that's why it's like money fights at Silence HQ now.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I would say that, you know, everybody thought that, you know, it's actually very interesting, you know, around 2010 timeframe was, you know, nobody wanted to really touch the endpoint. It's not very far back. But I think a few companies kind of came in around 2011, 2012, 2013 in those years where, you know, the endpoint suddenly was again hot. And now most of these companies are kind of maturing and come to a point where, you know, there's a clear trend emerging out of the various disruptive endpoint technologies that came out. And the one thing, what's really standing out and what's interesting is people are looking for an AV replacement. And you know, a lot of people actually wasted a lot of time and effort trying to beat up saying that antivirus is dead. But what we have come to realize is that people want a simple, lightweight AV that's effective, and they are ready to give up on their old legacy one because they are kind of done with it right now.
Mm.
So it's kind of interesting. And there are quite a few other niche kind of capability products which have been there in the market, you know, heavily focused on 0 days and so on. And kind of, you know, and I constantly talk to a lot of CISOs now, you know, who actually say that 0 days are good, but you know what? There is so much of malware being dumped on us right now. If I can't even make sure that I take care of these, you know, attacks reliably, you know, 0 days is a very niche area that I'm worried about.
I think people sort of fail in some of the calculations there as well, right? Which is if you've mm-hmm. got an adversary that's coming after you with O-days, that attacker is very skilled and they're going to find another way to get you. So, you know, while you're busy worrying about trying to prevent O-day attacks from well-funded adversaries, determined adversaries that you're probably going to fail in defending against them anyway, you know, your whole network's going to get hosed by ransomware, right?
That's true. Absolutely. Yeah. And then although, and there's also an interesting trend. I mean, if you are kind of watching the entire exploitation trend, the O-days have really dried up quite a lot, at least when it comes to like real working malware. WannaCry was obviously, you know, a high profile one, which was, you know, very reliable exploit, which was leaked. But in general, I think even the last O-day, which was reliably exploited in IE, like in it has kind of, it's been years, right? So, which also means that the classic application stack from Microsoft is also, Microsoft is spending a lot of time and effort on hardening their apps. So people are now kind of going to the old school way of you know, launching malware by stuff like VBA macros. You know, it's been there for like decades. And then you know, just, you know, you put a you know, password in a zip file and then send emails. You know, you'll be surprised how many people enter the password and execute the binary. You know, it's just insane.
It's funny, actually. I was just remembering a conversation you and I had in Las Vegas. We actually set aside some time to just sort of sit down and have a coffee, right? And I remember at that time, and it's something I don't think I've actually mentioned it on the show yet, but it's kind of big news, which is now Microsoft allows you to whitelist and blacklist certain OLE types in documents. And that's just mm-hmm. been such a big vector, right? Because as sandboxing has got better, you know, a great way mm-hmm. to use an Adobe bug, for example, might be to embed it as an OLE object in a Microsoft Word file. And now, mm-hmm. thankfully, Microsoft is giving you a way to block that stuff, right? So you think, you know, it is ridiculous that we're still dealing with macro threats in 2017, but you'd think, given the OLE thing has been addressed, you'd think maybe Microsoft is on the cusp of making macro threats easier to address as well. You would hope, right?
It definitely is a powerful capability, you know, I would say much awaited. But I think the awareness around that capability is not very high, you know, so I think Microsoft should spend some time and effort to educate their customers about this. Because right now I'm seeing a lot of attacks coming in via Word documents, you know, with embedded, script-based malware, essentially. So yeah, I think this is definitely the right move from Microsoft point of view. You know, they have spent quite a bit of effort on sandboxing and also adding, you know, a bunch of mitigation, expert mitigation stuff in their kernel itself now. So yeah, I mean, Microsoft is definitely making it harder and almost kind of pushing malware attackers to kind of go towards the classic executable-based malware.
Yeah.
Because that's something which Microsoft has not solved yet.
Well, it's hard, isn't it? Because, you know, when you've got a user who you can trick into basically performing like a five-stage process to install something, mm-hmm. then, you know, it's kind of hard to prevent that because computers are designed to execute code. So, Look, just back to the topic at hand here, you know, Silence, as we've, you know, sort of set up so far, has come in from the AV route. I know that you have a keen interest and very big plans in the EDR space. This is interesting. Now, I know that your initial offering in the EDR space is seen as a first step. It's not necessarily a complete offering. That is going to change in the next 12 months, isn't it?
Yes, we have very aggressive plans to kind of make sure that we, have a complete offering in that area too, and it's kind of converging very well with Protect, because Protect is kind of focused on which is our AV offering. It's heavily focused on prevention by our ML local models that are available in the agent. And Optics, the EDR offering, is essentially designed to kind of enable, you know, scenarios such as threat hunting. At Black Hat, we launched a managed hunting service as well, which you will hear about more in the upcoming months as we are scaling up the team and building a practice around that.
Yeah, so, this is an interesting thing, right? Because I've coined this term, not that it's caught on or anything, but I call it Splunk syndrome, right? Which is when people buy mm-hmm. these sort of labor-intensive products, particularly mm-hmm. around SIEM and EDR as well, that they don't quite have time to manage. But what it seems like EDR vendors are doing is they're kind of offering the software and a service, right? So you buy the EDR platform, it starts collecting logs and events from your systems and sending it to the cloud, right? Where analysts from whichever vendor you've chosen spend time actually just hunting through the data sets looking for weird stuff. So they're sort of doing threat hunting in aggregate across customers' logs. This seems to be the way everyone's going, right? And I think it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. I think the biggest challenge most people are having is, you know, the lack of security skills. So, you know, what we are trying to do is, you know, giving, you know, augmenting that with our services arm. So, yeah, we definitely are looking at that. And we are also looking at launching an MSSP offering wherein, you know, large MSSP providers can leverage our console for essentially, you know, doing similar scenarios like, you know, they can have their own threat hunting team, or they can just do the entire management of our products via the console. So yeah, so we are definitely looking at several big releases in the upcoming months to help the entire to kind of grow the entire platform story.
That's interesting, right? So you're looking at selling an offering to MSSPs that might, you know, have their own sort of threat hunt team. So you can either go for the, you know, the Silence in-house offering, or if you want something more intensive, you can go to an MSSP that's offering that. Is that the idea?
Yes, absolutely. So first of all, we'll give you the key capabilities in the software tool to kind of, you know, in case you have your own internal teams to manage that, or else we can give you a services, you know, play as well as a package. Or if you are, you know, a lot of people actually outsource their security services to big providers. So we will be, getting into that and working with them closely to leverage our offerings via MSSP console. We are definitely looking at that.
We've already spoken a bit about this idea of convergence on the endpoint, and that there's going to be a sort of set expectation in the market for what an EDR platform and an AV platform should and shouldn't do. I mean, can you describe to me what those sort of consensus features are, particularly from the EDR side? I mean, what should these things give you visibility into? Do we have a standard set of features for that yet, do you think, across the industry?
Yeah, so the EDR industry is actually pretty interesting because, you know, everybody has kind of come up with their own approach. And everybody has their own opinion about EDR tools. But there are definitely some specific now guidelines which Gartner and some of the folks have provided in terms of, you know, what is really an EDR tool. So some of those are, you know, that the agent should be able to, you know, give threat hunting, searching capabilities, and also stuff like, you know, there should be response capabilities. If you find something, you should be able to take different types of actions for remediation and response. It should have some kind of integration with other third parties, you know, tools like SIEM, like Splunk, and so on. So there are definitely some like very high level guidelines, but in terms of capabilities, it's very different, you know. And like, you know, antivirus, everybody knows what are the key capabilities of an antivirus. But when it comes to EDR tools, everybody has kind of their own stack, and they are calling it EDR right now.
So you don't think that's settled yet?
It is converging, definitely. It's definitely far more, I would say, at least there are some key capabilities which are standing out in the last 18 months than it was before that. So it is definitely in the convergence phase where, you know, you can pretty much now, you know, when I see RFIs from large companies, they kind of have a kind of an idea of what they really want from an EDR tool. So it's definitely converging, but it's a recent trend, I would say.
Now, of course, it's not just EDR that you're working on. I understand that, you know, as I said, you know, your responsibility at Cylance is about growing new product lines. You know, you're a product manager. You know, what else are companies like Cylance doing? What are you looking to? Because, you know, there are many opportunities in the InfoSec space. I'm guessing maybe some of that's going to be around network, because we're seeing companies like Darktrace have tremendous success using machine learning based approaches to network monitoring. You know, machine learning is a capability that you've got, you've developed. You were certainly ahead of the pack on that one. Is network somewhere where you're going to be looking?
We definitely are looking at, so we have kind of an incubation program, which is kind of rare for a company which is this young. So we have a bunch of technologies we are incubating in-house. We are looking at network as well, but however, one of the other things we recently launched was the home edition of the of
this is right. Yeah, because you're going to do consumer, aren't you?
Yes. So consumer is another huge market. And, you know, a lot of the, we believe that it has huge potential. So we kind of launched the home edition just a few weeks back. And the response has been simply amazing.
How do you make money out of home AV when Microsoft offers it for free? I don't quite get that.
Yeah, I mean, how we are looking at going to market is, first of all, we go to Cylance customers. So the home edition is about Cylance customers are purchasing it for their employees' home use. So that's kind of the first phase of this project.
Yeah, and that makes sense, right? Because we spoke about that before, and the idea being that, you know, you want your employees not having their home systems owned either, because that's bad for the business. So you're offering this sort of standalone version just for their home systems.
Yes. And in general, the cost of you know, the enterprises are, you know, we get heavy volume discounting in, because, you know, we are talking about large deals, large organizations. But home edition, generally the cost is pretty high compared to, you know, other AVs. So yeah, at least the sophisticated buyers, we are going to target them initially, because they are, you know, aware of the technology advances. So, and they are willing to pay a premium price for, you know, for security on their home computers. And then, you know, as we grow and build our brand awareness in that area, we will grow and go deeper into that market too.
So you will actually be going to, well, I mean, it's not going to be boxed software, obviously, but you will, you know, I'll be able to send my, you know, my dad along to Cylance.com, and they can punch in their credit card details and download a copy. Is that the eventual plan there?
Something like that. Yeah, we will have we'll have it available in various forms. The first phase is the home edition. We'll dry run this and see the response and, you know, how much demand is there, and then kind of officially converge it into a full consumer offering probably later next year, not this year.
Now, Rahul, you've been in the security industry for quite a long time. You've had experience both on the technical side and on the executive side with a bunch of different companies. There is so much investment and activity at the moment going on in the information security space. I'm curious to know, you know, I mean, I see all the technologies you're working on. I see the potential of them. What I'm curious to ask you, though, is which wrong turns do you think the industry is taking right now? Which product lines do you think will just cease to exist in 5 years? Because there has to be some.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I remember, you know, when I came out of McAfee in 2011, there were around approximately 300 cybersecurity companies. Now there are around 1,700 plus.
We have like 500 just in our CRM for selling sponsorships. It's insane.
Insane. So it may almost seem that it's oversaturated, and to some extent it is. I would say in a situation like that, first of all, the problem is in security is fundamentally that security is a very fragmented problem. You know, you will it'll be very hard to really have a single vendor who can actually provide you, you know, with everything. Because now you have IoT, now you have, you know, it's all over the place right now. Security is a growing concern across the board. But in a situation like this, where there are so many competitors and there are so many companies, I would imagine people will start converging into, first of all, the biggest ones that will start converging would be the smaller players where, you know, where the value or the value proposition is very, very niche, where, you know, you do not solve a broad set of problems, but rather a very specific limited capabilities. So those typically will get hit the most because ultimately the security buyer has, you know, a static budget. So they cannot buy everything, and they will go for the ones which the solutions which kind of have a broad solution set.
So
right?
Look, I guess this is something that we've seen before in the industry, which is the companies that are offering features rather than platforms just wind up being acquired by the platform companies, right? So anything under 200, any company under 200 mil just gets sort of snapped up if they're doing something worthwhile, and the other ones just sort of wither and die.
Yeah, exactly. So this is kind of where, you know, we are in that phase. And I would imagine that many of these companies, like, and I'm actually seeing this actually very actively, even in the investments side of the house, where Series A, seed is still easy to raise. But, you know, after Series B specifically, people are asking for, you know, tangible revenue if you want more funding. So, you know,
and tangible revenue in the software space. I mean, well, tangible revenue is a thing, but not tangible profit, right? Like,
yes. Yeah.
I asked one of my clients who's a startup, you know, they've been running for years, and I'm like, are you profitable yet? And he just laughed. He was just like, no. Do you know what I mean? Like, no one is, right?
Yeah. I'm sure investors will also be looking at, you know, they have already spent a lot of money across the board. They will also be looking at consolidating and looking at, okay, which bets are really sticking out there and where should they, you know, cut the cord, right? So I think that's also something which is going to happen in the next, I would say, year to 2 years. There will be a lot of consolidation with that, you know, in that area.
Now, look, I spoke earlier about how Microsoft, you know, offers very good consumer-grade AV, right? And it's free. So I sort of find it quite surprising still that there's so much money to be made in consumer antivirus. And I'll be curious to see how Cylance does there. I mean, I suspect that you'll make money out of it, right? Which, I just find surprising, right? That's not disparaging you. It's more saying that their stuff is good enough for the average home user. Where things are getting interesting at the moment, though, is Microsoft has renewed its push into AV and EDR. We've seen a few false starts from Microsoft. In terms of their consumer side, they've got a pretty good offering. I remember years ago we did, a friend and I actually helped do a bit of an on-table, you know, on-paper eval of Microsoft's enterprise-grade AV for a very large network. We're talking about 150,000 endpoints. And we quickly determined that in order to run that software, that client would have had to build a new data center in order to install enough Microsoft operations management servers to actually make the thing work, right? So it was never going to work at enterprise scale. It was a bit of a joke. And we were assured at the time that they had this stuff on the roadmap. You know, get back to us in 12 months and everything will be fantastic. It never happened. So Microsoft has had false starts in the AV space and now what we're calling the AV and EDR space. That said, we're seeing some significant movement now. What do you make of Microsoft's latest push in this direction?
Yeah, it's actually very interesting. So Microsoft definitely seems to be serious in, and they want to make another attempt in getting into security, specifically enterprise security. You know, they have launched a bunch of products and solutions. But I meet CISOs and buyers and you know security architects across all the enterprises, pretty much, you know, all the Fortune 1000 and so on. I rarely hear about Microsoft being treated as a competitor. It's very rare. So
it is now. But my question is more about where you think they'll land in a couple of years, because I mean it must be a discussion internally that you'd want to if you're doing any competitive analysis at all, you'd really want to be keeping an eye on them.
Yes, absolutely. And we are looking at Microsoft very closely as well. But in terms of technology advancements from a enterprise manageability, I would say they are still, I would say this is like the early version. So this is like the early entry. It'll take them a while before, they can have the enterprise readiness, which security buyers expect. So there's a bunch of work there to be done. Secondly, I think it's also the credibility, right? Microsoft is not known to be a security vendor, and you know when you're making a security purchase, you would want to go on whom you trust the most, the most respected brand, and also people who that these people are dedicated to security, and they will always be focused on that. So that will also be always come into play when you are trying to get into the security business, specifically when you aren't or inherently not known to be a security vendor. So that challenge will always be there for Microsoft all the time.
Well, I think they have this habit of never quite following through, right? Because there's just not this completeness that people want from their solutions. And I think proof of that is the fact that software companies exist to solve the privileged account management problem, right? I mean, the fact that, Windows authentication is not new. The fact that people still, people in high secure and regulated environments still need to use third-party software just to solve account management problems tends to suggest that they're not in the business of offering complete business solutions.
That's absolutely true. So I think they definitely are making a serious attempt. They bought a bunch of, actually quite a few companies in the last few years in the area of security. We are all waiting to and actually watching very closely how this actually plays out. But so far, from after active discussions with several people in the industry, I have not come across Microsoft from at least the enterprise customer. I'm not seeing much traction there. Probably it is yet to come, and I would say time will tell.
Now, look, the final thing I want to talk to you about, Rahul, is an interesting one. It's this concept of independent testing, so-called independent testing of security solutions, right? Because we've seen bake-offs that, depending on which bake-off you look at, Silence is either the most fantastic AV product ever created or is just rubbish and not worth using. And the same goes for pretty much every vendor. I mean, there's some that are consistently just rated, absolutely horrible. And it's my feeling that some of them, certainly not most, but some of them, it's just because they're not paying to participate. You posit that the AV testing space is a pay-for-play racket. I can understand that some listeners might have experiences that would cause them to be more believing of that than others. But why do you think it's a pay-for-play racket?
Well, if I am, I'm a vendor and I'm kind of involved heavily in the criteria for how an AV product should be tested. I kind of have influence over that. That kind of makes me think that, how much honest thought has been there to really improve the whole system, right? And this has been a kind of a problem in the industry at a whole. And and our stance has been basically that we want to really have an open discussion and conversation and discuss this, because we believe that the way most of the testing methodologies are designed are kind of designed for to kind of favor the older legacy players and not so much for the next gen players. And if you look at the results, all the old gen AV players do significantly well. They are, if they are doing so well, how come there is a such a big demand for players such as us? So there's obviously something lacking there. You know, I mean, if you look at some of the legacy vendors always getting in the high 90s, does that mean that they have really got the security effectiveness and they have suddenly turned around the corner? That is not the case. So that itself kind of is an indicator where you see that where the testing is kind of designed to favor some of the legacy vendors, and it's not reflecting reality, which our customers and people are seeing in the market.
See, I mean, on my end, I don't even see the pay-to-play thing as being the primary problem with AV testing and security testing in general. The problem is real-world testing is difficult to do in a lab, right? Any sort of simulation of real-world when it comes to anything like AV or exploit mitigation or whatever, I mean, it's just a difficult thing to simulate, isn't it? I mean, the only way you really get a sense of the performance of a security thing is to security defense mechanism is to use it in anger.
You are right. I mean, there is, besides the influence of big vendors, there is a fundamental problem, which is the problems of skills in AV testing. How can you create a malware reliably, which is true, 4 day, which virus total or nobody has seen before, and really use it for testing and be the authority or the source of truth when you do those testing, right? So there are very few people in the industry who can do that and have the credibility, who have the ability to kind of go out and build malware to the point where every vendor will say that, okay, this is legit. Very few people are there in the industry. So that there is a problem of skills as well out there. And people kind of go with the easy way where, you just get some pieces of malware fresh from VirusTotal like few hours back and you call it the best possible malware. But the point is that once it's already out there, people have already seen it. So it's not really what people in the wild out there are seeing.
Well, yeah, and like offline, doing offline testing to sort of get around that doesn't really work now that, a lot of AV has so much interaction with the cloud. If you take it offline so that, the prior exposure to VirusTotal doesn't matter, then you're sort of hobbling the product to more of a degree than you intended, right? So this is a legitimately difficult thing to do.
Yeah, I agreed. It is. So we are trying to make sure that we help and give our honest opinions to kind of make sure that as an industry, we move forward when it comes to public testing. And we have been actively involved with several testing agencies. So let's see how it goes from here.
Now, something that's been a sort of unexpected wrinkle for a lot of security providers that do rely on, the cloud. I still get weirded out using that terminology, the cloud. But yeah, we were just mentioning before that, most next gen security products these days have a fair bit of interaction between the client back to the provider, right? Now, GDPR is becoming a big thing next year. And that's got to be a compliance nightmare for any company like Cylance that's interacting directly with endpoints on customer networks in Europe. I mean, is that a compliance headache for you? How are you responding to that? How do you deal with GDPR?
How it affects us from Cylance point of view is actually very minimal, because the way we build the product is, we don't depend on the cloud for security. So we are not really, uploading tons of data in the cloud and then analyzing it and then sending out a response back. We have cloud-based manageability and we have, we have committed to build on-prem solutions as well to cater to the needs of Europe and our government customers, wherein nothing goes to the cloud. It's kind of almost, sounds counterintuitive, because everything seems to be going to the cloud. But there is a pretty sizable market, which we are very closely looking at, which just doesn't want to touch the cloud.
Mostly, well, it's interesting, Rahul, because we ran, a couple of weeks back, we ran our Snake Oiler special, and one of the sponsors in that was a company called Replicated, which specializes in taking cloud software and turning it into on-prem or private cloud software, and they're making money hand over fist, right? So this, it's really funny. We've seen this massive push to the cloud over the last decade, and now this massive rush back in within either the walls of an enterprise or within their own Amazon accounts or whatever, right? So this is a thing that's happening not even just with GDPR. There's a bunch of this is a movement, I guess, is what I'm getting at, right?
Yeah. And people are very clear that they just don't want to. There's a, I would say it's a smaller population, and it's kind of diminishing. I mean, it's a smaller number of users there, but it is sizable enough where you can't ignore them. So the overall, I think, long term, I think most people understand and realize that cloud is the way forward. It gives you, it's more elastic, easier to manage. You don't have to use those clunky servers loaded up in your data centers and for just manageability. So a lot of people actually like the whole value proposition of cloud. But yes, there is a small group of people, and GDPR has some amount of influence in those decisions too. But also there is a fundamental amount of, disbelief in mostly our European counterparts where, after the last few leaks and so on, people are very sensitive on what goes out from their corporate environments to the cloud. So GDPR is definitely going to be a kind of a big wave where people will start thinking differently starting next year.
Yeah, so I guess, by that time, you'll be ready to go hand on heart and say this isn't going to cause you any GDPR problems, right?
Yes, we will be definitely. Actually, we are already in a pretty good place. We have already given a lot of controls on, from a data privacy point of view. So our customers already have a lot of control and visibility, and we'll be adding much more granular capabilities to make sure that we are GDPR compliant.
All right. Well, Rahul Kashyap, it's great to speak to you again, my friend. We used to deal with each other when you worked for your previous employer, and it's really great that you've popped up with another Risky Business sponsor. It is great to chat to you, my friend. Thank you very much, and we will chat to you soon, I'm sure.
Likewise, Patrick. Great to be here. Thanks.
That was Rahul Kashyap there. He is, of course, the Chief Product Officer at Cylance, a next-generation antivirus company that, as you just heard, has some big plans. You can check them out at cylance.com. That is cylance.com. I'd recommend you do check them out if you are still using legacy AV. They need to be in your eval mix, unless you really love reimaging boxes every day and wrestling with outdated AV config tools, in which case, as you were. I'll be back next week with the weekly show, but until then, I've been Patrick Gray. Thanks for listening.